This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to BOLLandBranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, yesterday, which is 7 years almost since Britain voted to leave the European Union, 7 years and five prime ministers, five Tory prime ministers, agreement looks like it has been reached between the European Union and the UK. Its title is the Windsor Framework, and the European President, President of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, came to London, and Rishi Sunak, Prime Minister, had to face down the rebels, the hardliners, and indeed his predecessor, Boris Johnson. Well, not his immediate predecessor, they come and go very quickly. He had to face down some hardline Brexiteers, including Boris Johnson, who was trying to make mischief. This morning, the Prime Minister is in Northern Ireland, talking to business people to try to persuade them that this is a good deal for them. And it's a pleasure to welcome for the first time to The Stand, Suzanne Lynch. Suzanne is chief Brussels correspondent for Politico and would be known to many of our listeners as formerly being the Irish Times US correspondent. Suzanne, the most immediate question many people will want to wonder about is, how many concessions and what kind of concessions did the European Union have to make through its representative, Mauro Šefčovič?
Yeah, look, I think, Eamon, a lot of this was about optics and about, you know, presenting a deal that, in one way, Rishi Sunak needed to say he got significant concessions. But on the other hand, the EU had to give so much, but not enough to reopen the entire deal. And this is the skill of this. This is the trick of this. And I suppose, you know, the big political figures have been out this week, and we had this whole press conference with von der Leyen and Rishi Sunak. But like, in reality, it's the negotiators behind the scene who've been working on this, who got this over the line and who managed to do enough for both sides, really.
Yes, Šefčovič is an impressive looking character.
He is, and he's, one issue that's kind of interesting, some people here were saying, did they feel sorry for him? Because on Monday, there was von der Leyen having tea with the King and, you know, all this dramatic trip over on the Eurostar, and poor old Šefčovič was here briefing ambassadors in a boring room across the road here in the European Council. And I was speaking to people saying, you know, when stuff got exciting and got to the end, von der Leyen kind of swooped in. Now, but look, that's the way it is. We've seen that throughout Brexit. When things get very serious to the last moment, then you have the big figures like Jean-Claude Juncker, von der Leyen's predecessor, or Donald Tusk, whoever it might be. But look, it's undoubted that Mauro Šefčovič was the guy running this. Now, in recent weeks and months, von der Leyen's own team got involved. And in a way, you knew that's why things were getting quite serious. But the fact, I think, that at no point did you have this getting to EU leaders level. Like, there was a summit here just a couple of weeks ago, or last week, the one where Zelensky arrived, and there was no mention of Brexit at that. And I think that was an indication that they were prepared to kind of keep it within the Commission, give them the leeway to do what they needed to do, and the rest of the European Union just kind of wants to move on now and was happy, you know, with what was agreed.
Now, interestingly, personal chemistry sometimes works, even in these major negotiations. Ursula von der Leyen addressed Rishi Sunak yesterday as dearest Rishi, which was quite surprising. But I suppose if you've been negotiating with Lord Frost or David Frost, who is a hardline kind of bully and animal, Rishi Sunak is a refreshing difference. And he showed courage that people suspected he didn't have to face down Boris Johnson and the other Brexit hardliners.
Yeah, I think you're right in that. I think they admire him, that he's basically getting this done and taking that political risk head on. Yes. And saying, and you know, Eamon, maybe not von der Leyen so much, but the other EU leaders here, they're all politicians too. They know how difficult it is to try and get something through to your parliament, to try and deal with something that's so divisive. So they get that and they know how difficult it is. But I think Boris Johnson in particular, got under the skin of a lot of people here, and indefinitely, not just in France, but in Berlin. You know, when a lot of this was going on last year, you had the new government in Germany of Olaf Scholz, the chancellor, and I think there was no love lost there between those two.
Yes.
But Rishi, I mean, you're right, the whole body language there, I've never seen, that kind of chemistry between a head of commission and a British prime minister. And even here in Brussels, you know, I was speaking to some EU officials, and they absolutely, one of the first sentences they said to me and some other journalists yesterday was the mood music completely changed with Rishi Sunak. They're saying that was part of it. And look, even though it's ironically the fact that Rishi was a Brexiteer, but they could look past that and say, look, this is somebody who's going to have the moral backbone to get this over the line, and we're going to try our best and do business with them.
Now, what major concessions do you see, Suzanne, that the EU has made?
Yeah, I think the biggest surprise and the biggest concession was this issue of the Stormont break. A new lexicon has now entered the Brexit dictionary. But this we didn't really see coming. And this is the idea that Stormont, 30 MLAs from minimum two parties, will have to trigger this. And it seemed to be a way of them overriding new EU rules. Now, we have to stress here, officials were saying here in Brussels, there are lots of caveats around that. It would have to be an exceptional situation, a last resort. And the British government, if they came along and said this, well, then there would be some kind of a dispute panel or dispute mechanism that would have to deal with it. So the EU are kind of saying that, yes, they've agreed to this, but they hope it's not going to be used or very rarely used. But it is important in that it gives the Northern Ireland Assembly a much bigger role. I think the other big concession, there was definitely more work done on this in the last few weeks and months, was the fact that the EU's main problem really was the idea of allowing goods potentially into the single market, that they would come into Northern Ireland and then cross the border into the Republic, and then they're in the EU. And I think the problem is, you know, stepping back, that it's okay now. We all know there's not that much divergence between UK and EU standards. But what about in 10 or 20 years' time?
Yes.
So the UK signs this fetid deal with the US, which we know may never happen, but just say it does, and it has chlorinated chicken coming in or whatever. Then the risk gets greater. So in a way, I think the longer this went on, the more worried the EU would have become about this issue. And that's one of the reasons I think, I mean, it's a whole other debate about the pressure on unionists to take this deal. At the moment, that's the only reason the EU conceded on that. So they have basically made this green lane and red lane system. And that's a bit of window dressing. They were just calling it express lanes.
Yes.
But they have made, and in fairness, the EU has moved and the UK side can see this as a victory. There's going to be a lot fewer regulatory demands on UK businesses. You know, at one point they had to enter 80 data points on a form or something, and now it's going to be 21. More this trusted trader scheme they're talking about will apply to more companies. So they have made concessions there, and they hope that this will really have a genuine impact on the number of the amount of red tape and bureaucracy that will be associated with trade of goods across the Irish Sea.
Yeah, so they were the carrots. The stick, I suppose, Suzanne, would have been the threat of a trade war. Britain has suffered economically, as everybody knows, because of Brexit. It's worse than the government will admit, but people in business know, and indeed the GDP figures show Britain is, you know, at the bottom of the G7 league. The threat of a trade war was a big stick that the EU had, or was it?
I think it was. I think that's what this ultimately comes down to, if you pare away everything.
Yes.
But if this negotiation had fallen apart again, really where this was going to end up was the EU walking away and saying, right, like, because the Northern Ireland Protocol, you know, the trade agreement, the TCA, was predicated on the Northern Ireland Protocol and the withdrawal agreement getting sorted. So if that didn't get sorted, well then, you know, that would mean technically that the trade agreement could be, you know, withdrawn or changed. So I think they really would have gone down that road and, you know, potentially, let's see, touch wood, it does all get through now. But that is, that imbalance, I suppose, between the size of the British economy and the European Union. I mean, there's an irony here. Britain was always the country who saw the EU as an economic union. It loved the single market. It thought it was the best thing about the EU, that it's really a trading bloc. And, you know, they brought this huge market of 500 million people and businesses together. And now it's outside of it. So I think it ultimately, and I think it would have got to that place again. I mean, I really do think over the last year, a big change has been the position in Germany. And I think that there's absolutely no way Chancellor Scholz would have gone further than this. And, you know, if it come to it, you know, the concerns of the German BMW makers are long gone. And I think that, you know, yes, certain economies will be damaged more than others. But ultimately, I think the EU would be prepared to go that far if it came to that. So I think that was ultimately the big stick.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Now, there is another big date approaching at Easter, the 25th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement, and the prospect of Joe Biden being in the North, and also the prospect, if a deal wasn't successfully done, of another breach in British-US relations. That's another kind of stick, isn't it? I mean, there is pressure. They want a good relationship with the United States, as you pointed out, Suzanne. They seek a trade deal with the US, whether they'll get it, I'm not so sure. But the thing is, they want to give themselves the best possible chance, and that would mean not disappointing the administration in Washington.
Absolutely. The US has taken an active interest in this and has made that clear. I suppose the issue now for Rishi Sunak is how much the DUP care about that. I mean, we've had some members of the DUP coming out and effectively saying, well, Biden is no friend of unionism.
Yes. So, right about that.
So that's another issue. Yes. Is that a bargaining chip that Rishi Sunak is kind of going to be? It's a bit like the analogy of, well, a family member saying, you know, please get on board with me for this. You know, Uncle Harry is coming to visit and we need to get this together and we need to be on the same page. What happens if the other person doesn't see it like that? So I think that actually is a concern. What I think there is going to have to be a conversation or a dialogue with the DUP about what they want from that presidential visit, if it comes. Like, everyone is saying he might come, but, you know, the DUP need to be included in that. They need to know that that's a positive thing for all communities in the North. And I think maybe there hasn't been enough conversation about that and what that would look like.
Yes, I mean, the DUP's position, Geoffrey Donaldson has kept his cards very close to his chest. He said he can see virtues in this Windsor framework, but others, notably Ian Paisley Jr., said didn't feel right in his gut. God knows what that means. But getting his party on side will be important. And I wonder, what's the perspective in Brussels about the DUP and its significance, given, you know, that it's a very small party and it can at times, and is in this situation, holding all of Europe and beyond to ransom?
Yeah, I think politicians here are aware of the peace element of Northern Ireland, the fragility of the political situation in Northern Ireland. They genuinely are aware of that and see it as an important, it was one of their sticks, if you like, for getting to try and sort out this.
Yes.
Look, the EU, the whole other kind of debate about the EU's role in conflict and, you know, the Western Balkans or even what we're seeing in Ukraine and how the EU can be a kind of a peace project. So it's a kind of ideologically quite important to the EU. But in terms of the DUP, it is notable that the European Parliament here, now sometimes, and MEPs won't like me saying this, but, you know, it's seen as the lesser of all the EU institutions. But a lot of the Irish MEPs there and others have been reaching out to, you know, MLAs in Stormont. They've been over visiting.
Yes.
You have a history of unionist politicians as well as people like John Hume, people like Mary Lou MacDonald, who have sat in the European Parliament. So,
yes.
You know, it's kind of that angle, I think, is very real to a lot of people, a lot of MEPs in the European Parliament. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see more of that interaction. I was recently, a few months ago in a hotel in Brussels, and I said to myself, who's that? I realized it was Diane Dodds.
Yes.
In Brussels. You know, so there people are, so that those conversations are happening. And I think that's something to watch now over the next few months that they may, and it's part of this outreach to Northern Ireland about getting involved, all communities involved in this, that it wasn't so black and white. I think the European Union did move on that, and it took them a while to understand, you know, trade is a very mathematical and non-emotional kind of an issue.
Yes.
They didn't realize when in a post-conflict society that you have to be a bit more sensitive. I think there was a learning there for the EU on this.
Now, is there a time limit, Suzanne, for the DUP? For example, they say they need time. Or Donaldson says he needs time. Sammy Wilson was also on Newsnight last night with Paisley Jr. Sammy Wilson doesn't like it. Now, they're long-term members of the DUP. They may not be widely respected. The question of how long the EU is prepared to wait for acceptance or not, obviously there's also a question about how long Rishi Sunak can afford to wait. Is this in any way time-limited from a European Union perspective?
I think they still have a bit of time on this, and I think they cleverly structured it in this way.
Yes.
So quite technical, and I have the document here, but some parts of it could be at least a year before they come into
right.
You know, and then the other thing is that there are some processes that the EU has to go through. Now, nobody envisages any problems, but there's going to be this joint committee meeting probably at the end of March between the UK and the EU. But the European Parliament, again, there's probably around three legislative proposals that will have to go to the Parliament. I was just speaking to someone there and they're talking about that taking months. So, you know, I'd say there is some time there, 6 months or so. I'm picking that number now a little bit out of the sky, but there's no sense that there's an imminent deadline here. Now, what's interesting, though, is that the UK, and this is the carrot and stick issue, they're going to want to get going on discussions about other things that were held up because the Northern Ireland Protocol. And one of those, the top one there, is Horizon Europe. That's the EU's big research project. They've been left out of that because of the Northern Ireland Protocol, and they want to get that back moving again. So that's a big, that is a, something of a time pressure, I think, from the UK side.
Now, Bertie Ahern said earlier in the week that he thought if this wasn't done in the next 3 weeks, the European Union and Ireland, of course, would have to wait until the next British government, which most people expect to be a Labour government. So there was a sense of urgency he was injecting into it. Now, things have moved on dramatically. I think we can all agree yesterday was a dramatic day and its outcome has largely been welcomed. But the impression one got from Bertie Ahern's observations, and on this particular subject, he is, as you know, one of the architects of the Good Friday Agreement. He thought time was of the essence.
Yeah, it is a point that, you know, Rishi Sunak needs to seize this political window or it will be gone. And the longer this goes on, you know, the more danger there is. Like what happens, for example, in the next week if the DUP suddenly finds something on page 18, paragraph 5,
yes,
that's actually been spun slightly. And, you know,
or if Boris Johnson gets active and he's on manoeuvres, Suzanne,
yeah,
and they may feel he's the only person,
yeah,
who can lead them to the next election and have a chance of winning.
Yeah, that is true. So he's also said he's studying it. So whether they kind of team up. So that is a bit of a warning sign. But on the, you know, should they wait for Labour government argument? The other aspect here is that next year the European elections are on. So that's,
yes,
probably around May 2024. And things are gearing up for that. And it's going to be all about who gets the top job. Will Ursula von der Leyen stay on? All of that. That conversation is going to start, you know, this year. So if there was any big, if this was really to fall apart and you really had to get all the leaders involved, you know, you could see a scenario where they try and push that back until we've a new parliament and a new commission, which would be mid-2024, really.
Right. Just a final couple of questions. Sefcovic, the man who negotiated this and managed to stay sane while talking to David Frost, who's now Lord Frost, he's shown immense skill and patience. And when you look at the details, they're kind of, you know, you have to be, if you're not a details person like Johnson or indeed Donald Trump, this game is not for you, is it? Because the detail in this is important.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because in a way, this is like a victory for, they're not called civil servants here, but it really is of tech.
Yes.
They did the work. But this is what the EU does, Eamon. This is what the EU is good at. It mightn't be interesting, it mightn't be exciting, but this is what it's great,
yes,
at. You know, it's great. It's been doing trade deals for years. And also, the way it works here, I'm sitting here in Brussels, and there are 27 countries, 27 missions and embassies around here.
Yes.
And every day, every week, they're going in negotiating something on, you know, digital, you know, EU chargers or defence or agriculture. And every day, there are people there. It's usually the country that's holding the EU presidency is trying to get agreement. So they,
yes,
negotiate all the time. So when we're talking about, you know, connections or, you know, like concessions by the EU, like in a way they make everybody makes concessions here every day because you'd never get,
yes,
anything done. They start off with completely different and then there's compromise. So people don't see that as a failure here. They see it as an achievement. That's what the EU is about. Getting a document on X policy that you got 27 people to agree on. Of course, it's going to be concessions there.
Yes.
It's made of concessions. But that's progress and that you get something at the end of it. And this is what's happening with the UK in this sense. So, you're right about Sefcovic. I think he did have the right personality in that, you know, he's this very kind of serious. We saw him get emotional once a few months ago at one of these meetings in the parliament where you could tell he was getting very, very frustrated.
Yes.
But he's kept his cool. He's trusted his negotiators. And just yesterday, he briefed ambassadors here. It was, somebody put it to me, it was a bit of a listening exercise by them. He just set it out very clearly. But they were all, they have a respect for him. They were listening. They're all going to go back now and go through, comb through this document. Even as I said, we don't expect any changes. But I think he was the right person for the job. And the very fact that he wasn't that political and he was a bit low key was what they needed.
A final question, Suzanne. The president of the EU Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, this must be surely a very important moment for her. And she has shown herself to be formidable during this particular crisis. And she has, it seems, a very good chance of getting a very big result. Is her stock higher now than it was when she took the job?
Yeah, I think this will be put down as one of her achievements. But as I said at the beginning, because of the Ukraine war has changed everything here. We would be having a different conversation, Eamon, if this had been before the war. Everyone's attention is on that. So yes, we saw some of the East European leaders, the Czech Prime Minister yesterday tweeting congratulating them on the deal. So it's not the people are not that interested, but they're, as I say, they're happy to let her do it. But she very much is able to rise to the occasion. And she too is this detailed kind of a person, you know, not that emotional, just kind of gets it done. And, you know, she had the right attributes, I think, to try and take the emotion out of this, to see the British as partners, particularly with Ukraine, to try to work more with them and with the right person at the right time. So I think, and I think the fact that we were, you know, that little bit of colour yesterday meeting the King. Now, I know that was controversial in itself, but she could see the sense of it. She could see the gravity of this.
Yes, and Charles is very interested in politics. you may see him in Brussels one day, because he always has been writing. He used to write to all the prime ministers.
Meet Macron next month in France. So we were saying that's kind of maybe stolen a bit of Macron's thunder that, you know, von der Leyen got there first.
Okay. Suzanne Lynch, Chief Brussels Correspondent for Politico. We're very grateful to you for that contribution. We're very happy that you are on the stand. Thank you very much indeed.
Great to talk to you.
Thank you, Suzanne. Thanks to Suzanne, to all of you who listened. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.